buildings and tower and just crushed and crumbled. I'm not sure if it's safe to report from my vantage point. I really need to leave. So the fences informed me that the surrounding areas are in ruin. I see some people running now. In the opinion of this reporter, if this nation, or in fact the world, ever needed heroes, that time is now. That time is now.
Firestorm, the Fire and Water Podcast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm one of your hosts, the Irredeemable Shag, along with me, as always, is my co-host, the Illustrated Rob Kelly. How you doing, buddy?
I'm picturing me covered in tattoos, written by Ray Bradbury. It's a very exciting, alluring image.
I was thinking of you in line work, pencil and ink, but okay.
Oh, that's good, too.
I was going with the theme of the show. Way to go.
All right. You've not read The Illustrated Man? It's a good book. Anyway, all right, go ahead.
Well, folks, we are here for a very special occasion that Rob's going to tell you about in just a minute. And but here's something cool, just so you know. While you're listening to this podcast, if you listen to it on the day it comes out, that is, because, I mean, who doesn't,
yeah,
right?
I mean, come on, drop what you're doing. Come on.
I'm sure they do. When that comes through your feed, I would. Anyway, on Sunday, the day this drops, Rob and I are actually going to be physically in the same space. We'll have been together all weekend. We'll be at the Boston Fan Expo. We'll have been hanging out since Thursday night. So by the time you hear this on Thursday, actually, this makes this sort of a fun artifact of the past, really, because at this point, we're talking and getting along. After spending 3 days together in a hotel room, by Sunday when this is released, we'll pretty much hate each other more than we even do now. So that's kind of nice, you know?
True story.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to the Boston Fan Expo. I cannot wait. I was getting all my stuff together today. I'm like, all right, I'm going to get my photo ops ready and all this stuff. And I'm going through and I got my airline ticket and I got our hotel booked and all this stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute, when something's missing here. On Friday, I never bought a ticket to the convention itself. Yeah. So we came very, very close to me being in Boston and just sitting in the parking lot for 3 days, and which would have been fine for everybody else, I suppose. It would have sucked for me.
It would have been awesome, just waving at you through the glass. Hi, Shag.
I would have went and bought a table, actually, and just set it up in the parking lot and would have done signings right there in the parking lot with a little cardboard sign. But anyway,
your sign would say, there is no Earth 2 Aquaman, change my mind.
That is exactly right. It would. But all is well now. I have my ticket to the convention, so I will see you guys on the other side of those shiny gates. So, oh, goodness. Well, Rob, why don't you tell the folks at home why we are here today and what we're going to talk about?
Right. Well, upcoming in about a week from when you're listening to this, again, if you're supposed to be listening to it the day it comes out, but a week later is August 24th, and that is the birthday of one Jim Aparo. Right. Everybody who's listening to this knows who Jim Aparo is. He is my single favorite comic book artist of all time, which essentially makes him my favorite artist of all time. And we don't have an opportunity to do a lot of art-related or art-specific episodes of the Fire and Water Podcast or any of our podcasts, of course, because, you know, this is an audio medium. Right. You don't really spend a lot of time talking about the visuals, but we enjoy that. We like Chris, the art is half of what a comic book is all about, and we like talking about that aspect of it. And we did an episode, I was about to say a couple months ago, but I have no sense of time or place anymore when it comes to these episodes. It might be 10 years ago when we did the Aquaman right. Firestorm cover-to-cover show where we picked 10 covers, 10 Aquaman covers and 10 Firestorm covers that we really loved. And so we thought we would do that as a tribute to the unfortunately late, great Jim Aparo. And we're going to each pick 10 favorite Jim Aparo covers, and we're going to talk about them. And, of course, we will have these covers available for you to look at on our website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com, and the gallery post, so you can see exactly what we're talking about.
I don't know about you. When I put together my list, I got done. I'm like, oh, here we go. Here's my 10. Oh, that's 16.
Yep,
oh,
me too.
Crap.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to start whittling down, and yep. It was not easy to cut certain precious ones. So,
yeah. I just give a little bit of the rules about it. I wanted to have, the man really only worked for two companies, DC and Charlton. He, as far as I know, as I could research, he never did a single thing for Marvel Comics, which is amazing to think about.
Wow.
Apparently, I guess DC Comics was like, we're just going to keep you employed, buddy. And so they just gave him more and more work to do. So he really only did work for two companies, but I wanted to try and cover, no pun intended, as much of the work that he did for DC and some of Charlton in terms of characters and stuff. So my rule was, like, obviously he did so much work on three characters, specifically Batman, Aquaman, and the Phantom Stranger, that if you wanted to, you could have, like, just 10 Batman covers by Jim Aparo or 10 Aquaman covers. And I decided to say, well, I'm going to try and spread it out a little. And it was like, if I had – like you, I had ended up – my initial list had like 21 covers on it. And it was like, okay, if it's a tie sort of between Aquaman and this lesser-known book, I'm going to go with the lesser-known book just to spread it out a little. So I hope that my list has as much diversity as possible where I've got all the different characters represented. Because, again, if you wanted to, you could just do 10 Aquaman, 10 Phantom Strangers, 10 Batman, 10 Phantoms. I mean, just the guy was just brilliant. As I said, he's my favorite. So whittling this down to 10 was pretty difficult.
I gave myself kind of a similar rule in that I didn't want to use all the same book series. Like, I could have done 10 Brave and the Bold.
Oh,
easily,
sure. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I said, all right, I want to do all different books. Well, I kind of broke my own rule. I did end up doing two Brave and the Bold, but they're two different guest stars. And I did sort of cheat with Batman a little, kind of, because I mean, there's a hell of a lot of Batman stuff he's involved with. Oh my gosh. So, but for the most part, it's almost all exclusively different titles. So
you could practically do 10 Batman Wildcat covers by Jim Aparo.
almost, I think you could. Well, before we get much further, why don't we do our why don't we pay the bills? What do you say?
Yeah, okay.
So, folks, this episode of the Fire and Water Podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collector editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. What'd you bring, buddy?
Well, as you might expect, I picked something Jim Aparo-centric, and in this case, it's Batman and the Outsiders, Volume 1, Siskoid's favorite comic. It's a hardcover. It's Volume 1. It reprints Brave and the Bold number 200, New Teen Titans 37, and Batman and the Outsiders numbers 1 through 12. It's by Mike W. Barr and, of course, Jim Aparo. 344 pages. Normal price is $49.99. In-stock trades price is $28.99. That's 42% off. I love Brave and the Bold. I don't know anybody who doesn't love Brave and the Bold, but I also remember how excited I was at this comic when it came out. And the cover is just the cover. Batman number 1 features a scene that does not happen in the book where it's Batman basically calling the Justice League a bunch of losers and saying, these are my new partners from now on. I loved Batman and the Outsiders. Unironically, I just thought it was a great book and features some of Jim Aparo's greatest work. So this is a great comic if you haven't read it. Batman and the Outsiders, Volume 1.
And I have to say, cheating a little sneak peek ahead, Batman and the Outsiders number 1, the cover of that was on my list until the very end. Mm. It made it all the way to the final cut. There's a few things on the cover that are a little wonky, like Wonder Woman's face is a little wonky on it, but it's got Firestorm on it.
It's got Firestorm, right?
Exactly. And I just love I'm a big fan of word balloons. Unfortunately, you're going to see a lot of those in a few minutes. But I love word balloons on the covers. But it's just a great imagery of Batman. You know, he's basically flipping him the bird. You know, it's
two-bit Justice League.
Right, exactly. It's this great, powerful cover, and it's so iconic. And I wanted to keep it, but at the very end, I ended up choosing a different Batman and the Outsiders cover. But, man, what a great cover that one is. So my selection is also, of course, Jim Aparo related. I picked Legends of the Dark Knight, Jim Aparo, hardcover volume 3. So this is a collection of a whole bunch of Batman stuff by Jim Aparo. Some really great stuff in here. It's got a bunch of Brave and the Bold. It's got a bunch of Detective Comics. I mean, a lot of Detective Comics. A lot of Batman Family. I'm sorry, there is a Batman Family issue and the Untold Legend of Batman 1 through 3. So it's written by Bob Haney and a bunch of other folks. Of course, Jim Aparo's art throughout. Page count, 552 pages in a hardcover. Oh my gosh, that's unbelievable. Normally retails for $49.99, but you can get it for 42% off, so it's only $28.99. That's a heck of a deal for Jim Aparo, Bob Haney. That many pages, wow. And just a great collection of books. So I highly recommend Legends of the Dark Knight, Jim Aparo, hardcover, volume 3.
Just think of how many unrevealed Batman relatives are in that book alone.
I'm sure there's many, 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 many. And I'm sure there's lots of Batman out in the daylight cruising for chicks. I think it might even be Bob Haney's words. So, for these and all your other trade paperback needs, please visit instocktrades.com. All right, let's get into this. Remember, folks, go out to our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. Go out to the Aquaman and Firestorm show and look for the gallery post, and you will get to see all of these covers. So I'm up first, and the first one I picked, I did mine in chronological order. I don't know how you did yours.
That's how I did mine, too. I decided to just do them in chronological order because you could track sort of the development of his work over the years.
Exactly. So the earliest one I picked was not from DC. It was from his Charlton era, and I debated. There was another one. I don't know if you've ever looked at his work on the Gunfighters. There's this great Gunfighters cover for Charlton that I wanted for a long time. And it's interesting. Once you Google it, he had it on the Gunfighters and another comic called Texas Rangers, both published by Charlton, exact same cover, just completely recolored. So I guess they just reprinted the story, used it twice. I don't know. So either way, my first one is Strange Suspense Stories number 9 from September 1969. And this is a super fun cover. It's got a goofy kind of handwritten logo, which is super fun. But the main body of the image is this guy who's got a giant, what do they call it, a pith helmet?
Yeah, pith helmet.
He's clearly an explorer out in, you know, the Congo or something. And he's got a smoking gun. He's in a cave. And he's got this bewildered look on his face. And he's holding this giant gemstone. So he's obviously just stolen this stone from someone. And he's freaking out about it. And he is shot. And a man who's laying on the ground in front of him in the foreground, this wonderful figure of a what he calls a witch doctor. And so he's clearly killed the witch doctor. In fact, his quote says, "The witch doctor is dead, but the snake, where's the snake?" Screaming in big bright letters. And behind him is this giant king cobra with fangs out of leaping towards him, and he can't see it. I'm not doing the cover justice the way I'm describing it, but it's really set out well, nicely. Again, with the witch doctor in the foreground, the snake in the far background, the guy in the middle, and the sheer panic on his face looks great. It does say, "Behold beauty," as kind of the tagline for the story, and I just think this one is super fun, and it conveys action. You get a sense that there's imminent danger. This isn't a poster cover. This isn't one of those glamour shots. This is a moment of action, and it's got a word balloon, so it's got everything I love about it. What do you think of this one?
Oh, it's a lot of fun. I love that the cobra is about the size of a Buick, which is really fun. And the mask, the witch doctor mask, is really cool. And the lettering is by Jim Aparo. He lettered all his own work. By the way, one factoid I found in his Wikipedia page, Jim Aparo, self-taught.
No
so
way.
Yeah, so I'm really reconsidering my life choices because why did I even bother? This is extraordinarily fun, and this was one of the things I would hope that would come out of the show is that I thought I was familiar with all of Jim Aparo's work, but I've never seen this cover before, so I like seeing new quote unquote new stuff by Jim Aparo. So yeah, it looks like a blast. This is the kind of comic that if I saw it at say the Boston Fan Expo for a reasonable price, I would pick it up simply because Jim Aparo drew the cover.
Yeah, super fun. And along the top, by the way, there's a trade dress, and his body is dancing in front of some googly eyes. But those look like the googly eyes from the opening of Scooby-Doo, Where Are You?
Yes, they do, yes.
It didn't know this was going to be a musical number. And I love this because it really – as simple as the covers, it tells you – like you can already establish the story of obviously this man struggled with the witch doctor, stole the jewel from him, and now he's in imminent peril. All of that from a word balloon. It's just – it really gets me, and I'm excited for it. And like you, I would pick this up in a heartbeat.
Yeah. I'm guessing he's going to die from that snake wound, but
I'm thinking that's not going to end well for him.
Yeah, probably not. So, all right, my first pick is also from Charlton, because like I said, I wanted to represent that was how he got his career started over at Charlton, and it was working for editor Dick Giordano. And then when Giordano moved to D.C., he very smartly handpicked some of his favorite people to bring over to D.C. And so I went with the Phantom. Number 38, Jim Aparo had a long run on Lee Falk's The Phantom as a comic book. And so I had a hard time picking which cover because there were a lot of action covers and they're really beautiful. But I decided to go for this one, which is in contrast to the one you just picked, Shag. This is a poster cover.
Yep.
And it is just a great shot of the Phantom on his horse with his dog. I don't know the name of the dog. Sorry. And he's coming out of his skull cave and it features the single biggest block of text I've ever seen on a comic book cover. It's this yellow
it's
box.
Quarter of the page, isn't
yeah.
It? Yeah,
and it says three complete exciting adventures in this issue, and it is just—I mean, my God, how much of the cover this is covering? But I mean, this is to me—it's like if there was a lot of Phantom merchandise, and I don't think there was. This would be an image because it's just everything you want of the Phantom. It tells you he's a jungle hero and he's got his loyal sidekick and he's coming out of his own version of the Batcave. You've got the Phantom logo. It's just a beautiful image. I mean, it's just all the scenery and everything else. So, I mean, if you just remove the word, I don't know, called balloon, the word box, the word, I don't know. I can't think of a word big enough for how large this thing is.
Placard.
Yeah, the word poster. It's just a really solid image. I just love it.
I would definitely agree. It's a beautiful work of art. And if you're a fan of the Phantom, I would imagine, like you said, this would look make an awesome poster. And that logo for the Phantom, oh my gosh, how much fun is that logo? It looks like, you know, they borrowed it from Johnny Quest kind of thing.
Yeah, the skulls and the O and stuff. Yeah, it's great.
Just the letters themselves look great. I mean, God, I'd love to have a font like that on my computer. I've never read a Phantom comic book. I think my only exposure to the Phantom was the Defenders of the Earth cartoon. I'm not even 100% sure he was in that. I just think he probably was.
He was.
Okay. So, this doesn't grab me as far as like, oh my gosh, it gives me the feels for the Phantom. I do see that if I were a Phantom fan, this would be like just perfect. This would be like what we say a lot of time, iconic. This would be the iconic look for the Phantom. Yeah, it's beautiful though, and the colors are really sharp. A lot of nice, pretty colors, and even the yellow placard, which you don't like, the yellow complements everything nicely.
It does. Fun fact about the Phantom taking over for Jim Aparo on the Phantom comic book when he moved to DC was Don Newton, who would then follow Jim Aparo on Aquaman in DC 10 years later.
It's a snake eating its own tail. Yeah. All right, you want me to go on?
Go next.
All right. Adventure Comics number 431 from obviously DC Comics, January, February 1974. So this is – oh, gosh, I love this thing so much. So the top third of the book is covered with the header card, Adventure Comics. It's when it was just huge and bold, and it says The Wrath of the Spectre, number 431. But the bottom two-thirds is this great sort of ghostly image of the Spectre that – I don't even know if he inked it. It might just be pencils. I'm not sure. But it's this ghostly image of the Spectre, and he's got the cape pulled up with one hand like he's going to cover his face. The other hand, he's reaching out. And in the front is a man who was holding a machine gun. The machine gun is now dropped out of his hands, and his arms are melting like candle wax. And it is creepy. It completely conveys that awesome era, the Fleischer and Aparo era of Spectre that I love so much, where he was such a vengeful crusader. And the guy melting is just awesome. Because my favorite memory of Spectre, which I cannot find anywhere, is the Spectre lighting a guy, or like turning a guy into a candle and lighting him, and the guy melting from his head. And I can't find that image anywhere. I don't know that it actually exists. This is the closest I can get to it. And this is also one of the earliest issues I bought. Now, is Aquaman in this issue as well or not? I can't remember.
No. He takes over as a backup feature about halfway through this run.
Okay.
And that's the ones drawn by Mike Grell. And then a couple issues later, he takes over the book entirely.
Because I think that's actually the way and I might be misquoting myself. I might even be telling a different story than I told on Midnight, the podcasting hour. But I think the way I found the Spectre stories was by reading Aquaman backups in Adventure Comics. I think I stumbled into this Spectre stuff. But either way, I love this cover with the Spectre's hand reaching out. Oh, what do you think of this one?
Oh, it's terrific. I mean, it tells you everything you need to know about this new feature, that this is not a Spectre who is hitting people over the head with planets. This is a guy that's going to, like, dispense some old-school justice, and that's exactly what this strip was. And it's gory as all get out. I mean, yeah, no wonder he can't hold his gun because his hands are dripping off. So it's very intense, and I'm glad you mentioned the inking. Jim Aparo was a guy that mostly, almost entirely inked himself.
Okay.
And that was part of, I think, DC. He was always able to crank out so many pages is that he was like a one-man band. I mean, he lettered it, he penciled it, and he inked it. I mean, so much of the book was just done by him. Once in a while, DC would hand over his stuff to another inker with mixed results. There was that one issue with Batman and Plastic Man that Joe Staton inked him, which was a good combo. And then there were some other times where not so much. We've kind of talked about Mike DiCarlo here and there that we weren't huge fans of on Apparel. But for the most part, he inked his own material, and he was his own best inker. And I think I'm pretty sure that he inked this cover too, and it's a wonderful image.
Yeah, it's. I mean, he's only got his signature, so I just wasn't sure if it was straight pencils because not the foreground. The foreground's obviously inked. I was just saying the background. The inks are just not very dark, so that's why I was thinking maybe it was just penciled.
It does have kind of a washy effect. Yeah.
Yeah. It just looks so good.
Yeah, it's very nice. All right, next up, I picked The Phantom Stranger, number 21. And this, again, there was a bunch of really great Phantom Stranger covers to pick from. And I finally settled on this one, which is actually a comic I covered over on Professor Allen's show. I forget what the theme was, but it was something, I think, Halloween related or something. And so we covered the story. But this again, it tells you so much in a single image. And there's a shadow being cast on a wall of a guy being electrocuted. We see him writhing in pain, and we see he's got the electrodes strapped to his head. And then we have presumably the witnesses that are forced to watch this. And some of them are looking away, and some are staring right at it. One guy is sweating profusely. And meanwhile, in the background is the Phantom Stranger standing there, presumably judging these men who are looking after this guy. And I love the colors of it, the yellow and orange hue in the background, and the silhouette is in kind of a deep, almost blood red, and then you've got these characters in the foreground. It's just, and there's no cover copy other than all the stuff at the top, all new stories, best in comics, but there's nothing about the story specifically, and it just feels very Old Testament kind of thing that the Phantom Stranger is going to be somehow getting involved in this story. So of all the Phantom Stranger covers, this is sort of my favorite because it's just I love the depth of it. You've got three different sort of levels here. I think it's just a very captivating image.
It's very creepy. It's misleading at first, too, because I didn't – when I first saw this, I noticed the guys in the front. I noticed the Phantom Stranger. It took me a moment to notice the shadow on the back wall of the execution. Once I did, it's like, you know, it's very horrifying. And surprising between the Spectre cover and this one that both of them passed the comics code, that's kind of surprising.
You know, but this one's relatively subtle. I mean, at least you're just seeing the silhouette. I mean, the Spectre, that guy's literally melting, but – this one's a little more low key.
Well, the guy's screaming in agony though, and it's just the scream is intense.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the Aparo faces. I mean, there's no mistaking who those faces are of the witnesses. You know, the six angry men. They're clearly Aparo, and it's gorgeous. And the silhouette's a brilliant idea. I mean, a friend of mine who went to the Kubert School often told me that the silhouette is the artist's friend.
it is.
He's that guy's not very informed though. I mean, if he was self-taught, I might have more respect for him. But anyway, so it's really striking, that silhouette. It's so much more powerful probably than it would have been to draw it. Now, interesting. The Phantom Stranger, his name's on the cover twice. He has two little logos. He has the main logo, and then he has the logo inside a DC bat symbol, which I think at the time probably didn't represent Batman. But years from now, I can't imagine that bat symbol representing anything but Batman.
Oh, yeah. They would never let another character have a bat as a logo. Never.
Right.
Yeah.
So, too funny. All right. My next one is... okay. So, here we go. This is an interesting one the very fact that it's not on your list, which is so strange. Limited Collector's Edition C-37, which, that's a treasury, folks. I picked a treasury, and Rob didn't. How weird is that? And it is an image. It's just fantastic. I mean, this is about as iconic as you can get. I don't even know if this appeared here first or it was also used somewhere else. But it's got the giant Batman logo and the cross at the top, like the top one third. And then beneath that is Batman standing on a rooftop, and he's in a dramatic pose where he's got like one leg is raised up a bit. He's got his arms splayed out. His cape is flowing everywhere. He's looking up into the sky, and there's these four spotlights coming up into the sky. One is the Joker, one's Catwoman, one's Penguin, and one's Two-Face. And each one of those spotlights, there's a little like an iconic face image, like Joker's face and Catwoman's face and Penguin and Two-Face. And it's just it's five thrilling Batman tales. And it's, you know, it's all about these different stories that are reprinted in this treasury. And it's just a great, striking cover. Now, is this where this image appeared for the first time, or was
this original to the treasury?
It's fantastic. I mean, that Batman, I mean, if someone told me it was a Neil Adams Batman, you know, he's missing the washboard abs, but other than that, I'd believe it was Neil Adams. Actually, looks so good.
There was definitely some stylistic similarities between the two. Yeah, this should have been on my list. This is one of my favorite treasuries of all time. This was one of the books that cemented my love of the format. It's the very first treasury we covered on Treasury Cast because it features this amazing Two-Face sequence, which is reprinted from the Sunday strips, which as a child completely blew my mind that was a thing. And this has actually been turned into merchandise. You can buy this cover as like one of those framed pieces of art at like those craft stores that you see in various places. It's simply gorgeous. I would argue the trade dress is maybe a little on the dull side. Like special all villain issue is just kind of like flat and just sort of sits there. Not really like that well incorporated into the cover. But that's, of course, that's not Jim Aparo's fault. But it is about as iconic an image as it gets. And when the cool thing is, it's like you could just kind of repurpose it and just swap out heads if you wanted to. You know,
That's true.
You could put in, you know, Riddler, Scarecrow, whoever, you know, Killer Croc, whatever you wanted to do. It's a beautiful image.
And that Batman logo is just such a great logo.
Yeah,
it's very boss and in your face. So yeah, I absolutely love this one. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
and I should have said it's August, September, 1975.
Yeah, wonderful. Again, it's one of my – it really was one of the things that made me love the treasuries, and that I knew that it was presenting me something I'd never seen before, which was this Two-Face sequence where he dies at the end. I was like, wait a minute, what?
Spoilers.
Yeah, spoilers for a 40-year-old comic. next up, my first selection from Brave and the Bold, which is Brave and the Bold 114, which is a Batman and Aquaman team-up, of course. Now – okay, this is one of the things where the trade dress just went completely nuts.
Yeah, I'm scratching my head on this one, buddy.
Yeah, okay. The reason I love this image is because of the drawing of Aquaman and Batman, and and we covered this book on Fire and Water a long time ago. If Batman can't survive this brutal attack, will this be the last jet to Gotham? And it's got Aquaman pulling Batman's breather off underwater, and there is this. We all know that Jim Aparo was a master at kineticism and action. He makes people look just like savage when they're issuing these attacks. And I love that drawing of Aquaman. Aquaman's got his teeth gritted and he's gritted. It's such a great image that it makes me sorry that it's not the whole cover. Because this was back when Brave and the Bold was in their 100 pages for 60 cents format. DC was desperately trying to catch up with Marvel. And they were jamming as many features in here as possible. So unfortunately, the drawing that Aparo did is not even 50% of the cover. But that's how much I love the drawing, is that I'm willing to forgo all the other stuff because there's the stuff about Green Arrow and Martian Manhunter and the Teen Titans and an Aquaman solo feature and then plus some other stuff. And then you've got this giant logo. And I mean, there's a ton of crap on this cover. But I just love that central drawing so much that I'm willing to forgive it, even though it should be the whole cover.
It's interesting. There's two other Brave and the Bold issues with Aquaman that I considered. One of them may have made the list. We'll find out in a minute. But all three of them have Batman. If you include this one, all three of them have Batman with the rebreather on. Or your Scooby gear, which is kind of interesting. So are you not going to really talk about the Teen Titans side of it and the Green Arrow stuff? And, you know, do you have any love for those pieces there?
Well, I do. But, I mean, they're just reprints from the covers or an interior image. The Aparo thing is the thing that sells it for me. For some reason, Haney, when he loved to have Aquaman team up with Batman, they were always beating the crap out of each other.
Yes.
I really love that story. And this, to me, we'll get to one of the ones you did. But this, just that profile of Aquaman looking so savage, I just love it. I mean, the guy was great at Aquaman, and these are the two characters he's most famous for. But man, I really wish I could have seen what this looks like at big, you know, because it's such a great drawing.
Okay, well, it is beautiful. I the what I can see of it is beautiful.
Right, yeah. It is very tiny in the cover. It's true.
I have a hard time getting on board with this one. But conceptually, I love the idea of it, though. Is that the one where Aquaman had like a – like a spaceship or something like that?
Yeah, well, he had the underwater. Yeah, he had the Aqua Sub, but not the Aqua Sub. I forget the name of it, but it had a specific name. We talked about that. They should have made that like a toy.
Okay, I do remember that issue. Yeah. That was fun. Yeah. That was a fun issue. Yeah. Okay. All right, my next one is Brave and the Bold. It's my first Brave and the Bold. I do have two. Brave and the Bold number 121 with the Metal Men. Now, I have this weird misconception. I always associate Jim Aparo with the Metal Men in my head. He didn't do that many of them. He only did a few of them, actually, and mostly in the Brave and the Bold. So I don't know why. Maybe it's the Brave and the Bold that's got this disconnect in my head. But when I think of the Metal Men, I think of Jim Aparo, and I love this particular cover. It's so what you get is Batman and the Metal Men, and there's this locomotive, this old school steam train, and it's just trucking along, and it's going at sort of a downward angle from right to left. It's coming down like it's going down a hill at super speed. And so you see, like, you know, the danger of the train is speeding up and speeding up clearly. And you see the steam coming out the top, and you see smoke coming off the wheels, and the Metal Men are all leaping for safety from the train. And Platinum is saying, "Where's Batman?" And Mercury's saying, "I'm sure he's safe. Jump!" So you see Gold and Tin and Mercury and Platinum all leaping. But then you see what they don't see is Batman is strapped to the front of the train, and he's probably unconscious as the train is careening out of control. And it's a great – again, I like these moments in time covers that are just like, you know, almost like a panel from the comic with the word balloons and the action and the excitement. And that's what I love about this one. It says, "The Doomsday Express." So super fun cover. I totally dig this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely designed to part kids from their 25 cents. No doubt about it. Because you're just like, what the hell is this? Like, well, how is this happening? Batman's about to crash. Yeah, it's very, very exciting.
That's from September 1975. And, you know, it's funny. We were talking about the trade dress kind of ruins things. Okay. So on this cover, you get Brave and the Bold twice. A logo. You get once at the top and once again across the whole thing. You get Batman and the Metal Men at the top. And also across the center of the comic. All I can think is they must have assumed these things were stored in racks.
Yes.
In such a way that just the top couple inches were showing to show the Brave and the Bold and Batman and Metal Men across the top and then reprint it further below. That's got to be the only thing.
Yeah. And they knew that it had to stick out. The whole cover couldn't be shown. So they wanted kids to be able to find Brave and the Bold without having to look too hard.
Yeah, probably on a spinner rack because the way they'd be stacked that way. Yeah,
exactly. So. Exactly. Yeah.
So I just love this one. I love the kinetic feel of it. I love the action, and I love the Metal Men so much. So
when you start your Metal Men podcast,
well, you know, here's the thing. So I have the Showcase Presents, right? And I started reading it, and Showcase Presents and Challengers of the Unknown both suffer from the same thing in the Showcase Presents era, which is neither one are that exciting in black and white because in Challengers of the Unknown, unless you can see their hair color, it's tough to tell who you're looking at. Metal Men, well, you can tell who they are. It does start to lose something because there's something so fun and colorful about the Metal Men. So, I don't know. When am I going to start my Metal Men podcast? Yes. Never. But I would love to discuss them sometime.
I was hoping you would make some news on this podcast.
I got to get to JLI first.
Fair enough. Okay, well, my next cover, as I'm finally getting to Adventure Comics, you hit it a couple choices ago. I'm finally getting to it. I picked number 436, and this is another poster-like. I mean, all these covers are pretty much poster-like covers, but this is the Spectre in the background. He's huge. He's just all this hood, and just the sea of green. And then in front is this huge octopus with a big giant eye sticking up out of the water, and it is strangling a bunch of guys who look like maybe they're Nazis because they have that kind of outfit. One guy has like jodhpurs on kind of thing, and they have guns. You're not exactly sure what's going on because there's no cover copy. You know, there's weird Adventure Comics and there's the logo and stuff, but there's no indication of what the story's about. But I just love the horror movie poster-ish of this. I'm a sucker for big sea creatures. 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. I mean, we do see like some sort of observatory in the background, so I think it's some hint of what's going on. But I mean, this could really be an Aquaman cover too if you just took the Spectre out of it. You could see Aquaman doing the voo-voo-voo thing of getting it. But I love the huge eye sticking up out of the water. It is just such a classic monster, and the Spectre is impassively watching these guys as they're about to all get sucked down underwater. So I don't know. And I love the contrast of the purple octopus with the green of the Spectre's cloak. I just think it's really striking. Again, simple image. There's very little detail on the Spectre's cape. There's just a couple of lines to indicate it, but I love – and then he's got this kind of like stipple effect on the water in the front, so it's really a great bunch of contrast. I just love it.
And the purple across the top works well with the purple below as well. And, you know, the Spectre image is so clean. Like you said, there's not a lot of lines. Like if someone told me that was a Kaluta drawing just of the Spectre, I'd buy it.
Yeah, it does look a little Kaluta-like. Yeah.
It's very pretty. And, who doesn't love a giant, you know, Kraken sea monster,
right.
especially if you're an Aquaman fan? I mean, come on.
Yep.
And then by this point, Adventure Comics had the weird logo across the top, which I love. So, yeah, this is a great one. It's half postery, half action. Because, I mean, there is motion. There is activity going on. There's no word balloons, but there's a lot of activity going on at this moment. So, yeah, I think it's a great one. Yeah, and the observatory, just it's weird. It's just kind of off to the right, but it adds, like, a real creepy – like, you can't help but wonder. You know, it's Chekhov's observatory. Like, why is it there? What's it going to do? You know? So, so good. Yeah, love it. All right, next one on my list is my other Brave and the Bold, Brave and the Bold number 126. So this sort of ties in with your previous one because this is the Aquaman one. It's April 1976, and what you've got here is, as it should be, a full-size cover of Batman with a rebreather. Sorry, not this little corner box you liked. But so it's Batman and Aquaman, and yes, Brave and the Bold and Batman and Aquaman have both appear as logos twice again on the cover. But undersea, Batman is struggling against these Nazi scuba guys, and you know they're Nazis because they got giant swastikas plastered on their arm. You know, not subtle, these guys. And they have Batman being held underwater. Batman's all his arms are out, his legs are out, they're tackling him, and they've pulled his rebreather off, and he's gasping for air as he's underwater, and they've got spear guns, and Aquaman is swimming in from the background, coming to rescue Batman. This is what lurks below Buoy 13, with a giant question. So I think this one's fun. It's another action moment. You've caught right in the moment where Aquaman's swimming in to save him. It's not a versus. They're not fighting this time.
No, they do in the story. They kind of get at each other, but yeah, on the cover, he's coming to Batman's rescue for sure.
Yep. And what lurks below Buoy 13? What a great tagline.
Yeah.
It's so wonderful.
Yeah, it's like the Metal Men one. It's just, it makes you want to drop a quarter to the news vendor to pick this up. Because you're just like, all right, what the hell's happening here? Who are these Nazis? Again, Batman has to get a better rebreather. Because people are just constantly yanking it off his face. He's really got to work on that.
Well, even in the 60s show, he had just that little one, didn't he?
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
you think he would have just gone for that. But yeah, he's got big scuba cables and everywhere. And his legs are just all, you know, why doesn't he have like bat flippers? You know, he seems like the kind of guy that would have bat flippers, you know?
That's true.
So, all right.
I appreciate that Aquaman got his little portrait up next to Batman on the top bar of the cover.
It's true. Metalman didn't get one.
Metalman didn't get it. Right. They get their own. They maybe didn't have like a piece of stock art to use or whatever. So, yeah, I dig it, of course. So my next cover is we're finally moving over to a solo Batman book, which is Detective Comics. This is number 444. This is another one where there's way too much stuff on it. It's another 100-pager for 60 cents. And at the bottom, there's some heads. There's Roy Raymond, and you're, of course, a descendant of Firestorm. Kid Eternity, Robin, Elongated Man, and Star Hawkins, because, of course, Star Hawkins belongs in Detective Comics.
He does, in his sex bot. Thank you very much.
Okay. But really, of course, what I'm here for is this main image. And this is one hell of a grabber, because it is a new shock tale. Batman becomes Bat Murderer, and it's him shooting a woman in the back, and you've got a bunch of cops, including Commissioner Gordon, and one guy saying, "Good Lord, Batman, you didn't have to kill her." And I just love the staging of this, is that the woman is in the foreground, her body's contorted as she's taking a slug right in the back, she's looking shocked, and Batman is just standing there impassively as he's shooting her. And the logo, the Detective Comics logo is massive. I mean, it is from one side of the cover to the other. It is taking up a full one-third of the cover. But I love the way that Aparo works it in. He puts this moon, this gigantic moon motif behind it. And then
that's my favorite part.
And then he makes
giant orange.
Right. And then he puts the woman in front of the logo. So the logo copy is incorporated into the drawing. It's not like it's separate. The way they had to do for some other things. So I just love the position of this, the design of this, and I think DC realized how good a drawing it was, because when this story was reprinted into DC Digest, they just took this as the cover. They just reused it, and that's really smart because it's a fantastic image.
So I've read this story in the DC Digest. I clearly don't remember it because I'm looking at this woman and I'm thinking, isn't that Talia?
Right. No, it is not Talia.
Right, but it looks like her, doesn't it?
Right, it does. Right, she's in like this purple bodysuit and she's got a holster and a gun. Yeah, she looks like – it does look like Talia Ghul, sure.
Okay. So it's funny my mind's playing tricks on me. So now also a testament to how good this cover is. Several months from now, another Detective Comics cover will be a split screen. One half will be this cover. And the other half will be the cover, the same drawing restaged with Commissioner Gordon shooting Batman in the back. And it says, like, this story started with this and it ends with this. Have you not seen that cover?
No, I don't think I have.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't know the number of issues later. But if you just cycle through. And by the way, we should mention, there's a function on Mike's Amazing World of Comics where you can see all of Jim Aparo's covers. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. But it's so worth just sitting there and going through all the Jim Aparo covers. But you can cycle through the Detective Comics covers, Rob. Just go, I don't know how many issues later. You'll find, again, it's this cover on the left, and on the right, it's Gordon shooting Batman. Same exact poses.
Very cool. That's great.
So it's iconic that quickly. And yeah, my favorite part's the giant orange moon behind it, because what it does is it makes this perfect background, because she is, you know, centered on it. I mean, the whole circle is centered around her. And so she is really spotlighted by this orange circle, and the look of horror on her face, it looks phenomenal. It's a really great shot. Again, like you said, it makes you want to, you know, give up your 60 cents to go, my God, I have to know how this turns out.
Yeah, and the look on her face is fantastic. Like, just the utter shock that she's taking a slug in the back from Batman is great.
And that's an Aparo face. No one else can do that face. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh, that's a great one. Good choice. My next one is an unusual one. So let's see. This is Weird War Tales, number 53. And this is by DC. And it's from May 1977. Did anything happen in May 1977?
I don't know. I was almost 6 years old. It's a very exciting time.
We can ask Ryan Daly, but I don't think he cares anymore. I think it's all been killed. But anyway, Weird War Tales. So the mystery and madness of Weird War Tales, as the cover copy tells you. And what you've got in the very foreground at the very bottom is you have a soldier who is there's a few soldiers that have died. And one is clearly looking at you. He's the eyes of a dead man is what you can see. This man has died in battle. He's a GI and has his name emblazoned across his shirt. And it says J. Aparo, which I love. And rising out of him is this ghost. Right, is this really nicely drawn, line-worked ghost who's got a kind of a pale yellow color, and he's got his rifle with bayonet on it. And coming at him in full color is this other ghost who's just horrific looking. It is a man wearing a blue, I don't know if that's supposed to be Prussian. I don't know what kind of uniform he's wearing, but some old school army or military uniform. And he's got a skeleton face, and he's riding a skeleton of a horse. And he's yelling, "You tried to escape your fate, but no man is beyond the reach of death." And along with him are several other warriors from different periods of history, it appears, that are also spectral warriors coming his way. So the ghost of Jim Aparo is going to battle death, and it just looks great. I love this.
Yeah, I love this one. I'd never seen this cover before. This was one of the ones when I saw it on your list. I was like, I didn't even know he did anything for Weird War Tales. And I always wonder how that stuff comes about. You know, like, did he have some extra time? Did he request it? You know, did he was like, hey, because he kept his hand in doing, even after he had gotten, quote unquote, promoted to Brave and the Bold and Batman, he still would do the occasional horror story, the occasional mystery story or thriller story. So, I mean, obviously he liked drawing other stuff. I should mention, way back in his Charlton days, he actually drew a humor strip called Bunny Love. And it's actually very cartoony style. You'd be pretty shocked if you saw it. But unfortunately, Bunny Love never got any covers by Aparo, so we couldn't use it for this episode. But yeah, check down some Bunny Love. They're pretty interesting things. But
I think you should probably be careful Googling that at work.
That's a good point. Yeah, put in maybe Charlton Comics Bunny Love. It'd probably do it for you. But anyway, no, I love the colors of this and that guy's face, the dead Aparo soldier. This the horrors of war faces. Classic.
I've really, in doing this show, and whether it be the digests or Who's That or whatever, I've really grown to love other genres of comics. And this War one just looks great. I mean, look at the way they did the line work on the ghost of the Jim Aparo guy with the yellow and the whites with the coloring, too. It's just – he looks spectral, you know, and it's just exceptionally well done. I really, really dig it.
Yeah, it's really – it's great. I mean, again, I love discovering new things like that. Like, I had no idea he ever did any war comics, so good for him. My next pick is finally an Aquaman solo book. I mean, I tried to limit to how many Aquaman covers I could do because obviously I would just pick them all if I could. But probably I gave the edge to Aquaman number 59. The story is called Aquaman Stands Alone, and it's basically summing up all the plot threads at this point, and it's assaulted by the authorities, and there's a NATO ship attacking him, attacked by an unknown foe, and ambushed by the fishermen, and then he's in the center swimming out in the very forced perspective coming out, and I think, I mean, it's an iconic image of Aquaman swimming. I mean, it's very dynamic, it looks muscular, and his hair is moving, it's, the colors are great, there's this orange sky, and you've, the background elements are bifurcated with these cycle like motion lines. So you're getting, since these are three different storylines coalescing into one book. But I think people realized how great this was because this image actually ended up appearing on merchandise. There was a
like the whole image or just the Aquaman?
No, the whole image. Minus the trade dress, minus all the cover copy. But there was in the 70s there was a line of kids menus given out at restaurants for DC Comics stories, and on one side I forget what was on the one side because there was a Pizza Hut line of menus, and this is not that, but there was another thing that was like a poster image, and this was the image used. So I think they recognize what an iconic shot it is because you've got the logo and he's swimming out at you. So it's, to me, it's just, it's a really beautiful shot of Aquaman.
Well, I like the colors. I've always liked that particular Aquaman logo, especially with the, in the green with the orange behind him. It's good symbolic of his costume. I like Aquaman's figure, but the cover honestly doesn't do much for me. It should. Is that Scavenger ship? Is that what I'm looking at?
Yeah.
Okay. So I love the Scavenger ship. It's a goofy design. I just love it because of its nostalgia. But yeah, the cover doesn't do much for me. There's a lot of other Aparo Aquaman covers that I thought you would have picked, so I'm kind of surprised. But
I like them all. Yeah, I don't know. This one just seems so postery. Again, maybe because it was used as a poster, that's the one I went for.
I mean, I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying I probably wouldn't have gone with this choice. Right. So, yeah. I mean, I'll take bad or mediocre Aparo over just about anybody on any given day. True. So yeah. All right, my next one is Batman number 294 from December 1977. So here is where we get into some funny memories here. I had this comic as a kid, and I did not remember that until we did this project. So until I was going through that Mike's Amazing World of Comics, I had completely forgotten that I owned this comic book as a child. I guess I started my Batman phase early, December 1977. It's a cover with the Joker. It's starring in this issue, the Joker. And then you have a great Batman logo across the top. It's a little washed out, almost on purpose, maybe with purple. But you see in the very foreground on the bottom is Batman. He's down on the ground. He's obviously been knocked down. He's not dead because his head is being lifted up. He's lifting his own head up. Anyway, his cowl is being peeled back, and you can see his face is revealed. However, all of his features are gone. You can't see his eyes, his nose, or his mouth. There's just shadowy areas where his eyes would be, or his nose would be, or his mouth would be. His face has sort of been erased. And the Joker is the one who's pulling the cowl back, and he's holding this canister of gas, and he's laughing, of course. Ha, 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 ha. And he's saying, "So long, Batman. This time I really rubbed you out. What a joke. Even in death, your secret identity is still a secret. Ha, 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 ha." And I don't know if it is as iconic cover as I feel like it is to me. I'm completely looking into this through nostalgia goggles. But I was just so excited to stumble across this as a piece of, you know, my childhood I had completely forgotten about. And I do think it's a great cover. You know, it gives you these scary – like anytime I see a movie where someone like, you know, someone mystically makes another person's like mouth disappear or their eyes disappear, it freaks me the crap out. It's just so creepy to have that sense, that part of your body taken away, your identity. And here having Batman's, you know, face being being wiped away is just so creepy. And it's great Joker. I love Batman in the foreground. He's just massive because he's right in your face. And I just love it. Now, as someone who doesn't have the nostalgic connection to this book, what do you think of this cover?
I like this one a lot. My favorite part is by far the effect on Batman's features. Mm-hmm. Is that it's not done with an ink line. It's done in a wash. So it gives it this faded effect, and it gives it just weird. You're like, what the hell happened to Batman's face? So, no, I like it a lot. I mean, again, he's right in the foreground, and he looks sad. His mouth is in this frown. It's like you said that he's not dead, obviously, because he's lifting his head up. But he looks forlorn. He looks utterly defeated. And, again, it's the Joker. It's bad, you know, and the logo. I mean, one of the things we haven't mentioned to this point is, of course, all comic book companies have their character or title logos as black and white art, and you can swap out the color for whatever color you needed, and that's how you would, and they could use different colors for different appropriate, you know, you don't want, if you have an all, like, say, green cover, you don't want some, like, you know, another green logo, or maybe like something that contrasts poorly with it. But here you've got the purple of the Joker, so you've got a purple Batman bat symbol in the background, and then blue and yellow for his logo, so it blends in well with the cover. It's complementary to the image that you've got.
Yeah, it really does work. The colors work nicely, yeah, because the blue keys perfectly off the color of Batman's gloves.
Yep.
And so, yeah, it works really – and then the orange of the laughter and the gas gun complement the purple quite well. So it looks nice all the way around. I can't tell you how much this fired my imagination and memory when I came across this. I'm like, oh, I completely forgot this thing even existed. So very exciting.
Well, then my next choice is a comic that I had as a kid, which is Brave and the Bold 175, which is Batman and Lois Lane. Not a team-up you would see a lot. It's a story by our pal Paul Kupperberg. And it's the reason I love this. Again, I had this comic as a kid. You've got a sound effect. You don't see a lot of sound effects on covers. You've got Batman going, "Arr," because Metallo is blasting him with his kryptonite heart or whatever. And of course, you're wondering, well, why is that even bothering Batman? But I guess it's just radiation at this point. But what I love about it is Lois Lane comes swinging in, and she looks like Marion Ravenwood. And I mean, and there's something about the way all of the lines of the cover lead your eye to Metallo in the center where he's got his fists out and he's blasting Batman with this radiation, and it says, "Watch out for Metallo." I just love Lois Lane coming in on that angle, ready to kind of kick Metallo's ass, which is interesting. but I the design of it, I think, is really great. And I like that, again, it's Batman's getting zapped while it's Lois Lane coming to the rescue. So I really dig it. And I kind of like the very minimalist detail on Metallo. He's really just a figure with that heart. But it's Lois Lane, to me, is the main image there. It looks really cool.
Hey, she's doing all that ass-kicking in heels, too, by the way.
Yeah,
Just smoking hot. Let's put that out there. Now, here's an interesting thing with coloring that they did poorly, where you said, "Watch out for Metallo." It's not all that it says. It says, "Watch out for Metallo, the kryptonite killer." But the kryptonite killer is in such a green against another green, it's impossible to read.
Yeah, they didn't put any outline on the thing. And the banner that it's on is on a light blue, so it's a little hard to read.
Yeah. But one of the things – I think my favorite part about this cover, I mean, besides Lois, because it is pretty awesome, is the lines on Metallo. Because, you know, his kryptonite heart is shining. And so the bright light is casting these weird lines on him, radiating directly out of the center circle. So they're straightly going from the circle outwards. And so you got him going in all directions, which just looks really cool because it shades him even across his legs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just really very effective. It's just showing you how blinding the light is from his chest.
Yeah, and again, all the motion lines are pointing towards Metallo. It's everything is leading your eye towards that part. The beams of light are pointing to him. Lois Lane is pointing towards him. The angle of the cover, everything is leaning towards Metallo. So it's drawing your eye towards this figure. Again, it's a very well-composed cover.
It's almost like the guy knew, the artist knew what he was doing.
Almost.
All right, my next one is World's Finest, number 255, February to March 1979. I don't know. Have you ever seen this wraparound cover before?
Yes, I love these World's Finest covers because, again, another thing we haven't mentioned is, other than Brave and the Bold, Jim Aparo didn't get to draw a lot of the DC superheroes.
Right.
He tended to be the same, you know, drew Batman and Aquaman and Phantom Stranger, but it was such a treat. Here he's drawing Captain Marvel. When else does he ever get to draw Captain Marvel?
Exactly. So it's there's a lot of things to love about this. First of all, it's wraparound, which is awesome.
Love wraparound covers.
And he's managed to – it's not just one of these where you have floating heads. He's worked the characters into the scene. Now they're not actually in the Batman story.
No, it's a total lie, this cover.
Right, but they've worked it into the cover here where on the front side, which would be your right-hand side of this wraparound cover, Superman is in the far background. He's being tackled by this giant green bat god monster. So the bat god's in the background, rising from the swamp almost like the Legion of Doom helmet. And the monster's holding Superman. And then in the foreground, Batman is being knocked to the ground. He says, "I'm helpless. The living bat god is destroying Superman." And the man knocking down Batman is another version of Batman, a very weird-looking version of Batman. The bat symbol's different. The headpiece is different. It's got more scallopy ears. But it's some version of Batman. And he says, "Then only the original Batman-man can save him." So clearly this other version of Batman is going to go save Superman, and he's pushing the Bruce Wayne version of Batman out of the way. And on the back side of the cover, as you said, you've got Captain Marvel flying in. You've got Black Canary swooping in on a vine. You've got the Creeper crawling over some rocks. You've got Green Arrow pulling an arrow out of his quiver, getting ready to blast him. And it says, "In these pages, the world's finest superhero sensations, Shazam, Black Canary, the Creeper, Green Arrow." And on the front side, you got a whole lot of cover copy at the top. But that's all part of that trade stress for World's Finest. But then in the bottom, you know, who and what – yeah. I'm sorry, let me see. "Who or what was the original Bat-Man?" And there's like little voodoo priests there or clerics or something in their corner. I didn't even notice till now. And of course, there's a little stripe that says, you could be a winner in the second Superman movie contest. Details inside. So you've seen this cover before. This is another one that I had as a kid. So I had this one as well as a child, and I read this thing over and over and over. And it's – I guess I was reading it before I was able to actually read. What year did this come out?
I think this is like 78, I think.
Which would be weird because I could – 79. So yeah, I could read by that point. I was 7 years old.
Oh, it says it right there on the cover, March 79, right at the top in the bubble. Yeah.
So I was definitely able to read by this point. So I guess I just didn't take the time to read. I don't know. But the two different Batman thing confused the hell out of me as a kid. I just was like, why? And at the time, I guess I remember I knew who the other Batman was. But it just was – it's such a creepy design for Batman because his face is all black. You can only see his eyes and his eyebrows. Those scalloped ears scared the hell out of me. And then in the back, the Creeper, I never understood the Creeper. I've talked about that at length before. I'll mention it in a minute. But what does this cover evoke in you?
Well, I've never read this comic. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's written by Bob Haney. I'm just an educated guess. No, I love these covers. I mean, again, I always knew even as a kid that it was a cheat that these heroes don't actually mix in with the story. But I didn't care. The scene setting is great. The depth of field is unreal. How much stuff you've got going. You've got Batman in the foreground. Then you've got the heroes kind of in the middle ground. You've got two different layers of trees that Captain Marvel is flying in between. Then you've got a kind of trees and jungle behind them. And then you've got this sort of purple colored sky. So, I mean, this thing is like a diorama come to life. It's really.
Then there's the layer of the bat god in the background with Superman.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. We got that going on. And again, I love the little voodoo guys, the little supplicants in the back, whatever they're doing, praying to this god that's killing Superman. It's a blast. It's total fun. I mean, it's nonsense because you're just like, there's so much stuff going on here, but I love it anyway.
It's a bit like a Who's Who cover,
It really is, yeah.
And that bat god, it's still freaking me out. I'm going to have to go back and reread this because I want to say maybe it was Batman's dad, because I know Batman's dad was Batman at one point, right?
I think so, yes.
Is this the story?
I don't think this is that. I don't think this is that story. But yeah,
Chris Franklin's probably freaking out at home. He knows exactly what it is. But again, the Batman is so Aparo does such a great distinctive Batman face.
Yeah,
that I love the way the Bruce Wayne Batman looks. Now in this comic, this was the first time I ever ran into the Creeper. And I did not understand him. I talked about this, I think, when we did Creeper on Who's Who. I don't know. Or maybe it was when I did it in JLI. But Creeper confused the crap out of me. Because, I didn't understand what he was supposed to be. Is he supposed to be – I was convinced he was connected with the Joker. I was convinced somehow he was related to the Joker in some way. And just couldn't wrap my brain around why he was a good guy as a kid. It just was bizarre. And to this day, I still don't get the warm and fuzzies from the Creeper. So, it all ties back to this issue.
All right. My next choice, you mentioned Chris Franklin a second ago, and my next choice is Brave and the Bold number 182, which I believe is Chris Franklin's favorite comic of all time.
Oh, that's right. You're going to say it was Batman and Chris Franklin.
Yes, yes. It's the team up is Batman and Robin, the X. Boy Wonder, and you've got Batman with the now adult Robin and the retired Batwoman or Batgirl, Kathy Kane, the Earth 2 versions, and it says, what's going on here? Interlude on Earth 2, and they look like they're about to get the drop put on them by a rampaging 1940s Batmobile, and floating in the sky is the head of Hugo Strange. Mm-hmm. This, I mean, we talk about how covers are meant to – you're supposed to pull it off the stands and – get you to drop your money. I remember where I bought this. This comic was the introduction to the work of Alan Brennert, which of course had become kind of a big thing in my life. And I love that that Aparo made the extra effort to put the floating ghost head of Hugo Strange in a kind of duo tone, because it's got this sort of burnt sienna sort of look to it. So it gives it that extra weird feeling. It pops out from the line work of the rest of the cover, and it's just a great — I love Batman with his arms outstretched and his cape flowing. And I was also — I love Earth 2. I'm a big lover of Earth 2, so any story set on Earth 2, I was excited. I think Alan Brennan's the same way. I think something like I don't know, of all the stories, he's only written like 10 comics, I think like 7 of them take place in Earth 2. But I mean, I always put Brave and the Bold anyway. That was a must-buy for me. But this was one of those like, oh, this is everything I want, because it's Batman or two run. And again, what a fun team up of him and the now adult Robin, and they make a lot of they get a lot of grist for the mill out of that. And I love that old timey Batmobile with the giant head, the giant bat head in the front and the fin. But just that ghostly head of Hugo Strange is, to me, just really is what sells it, because it pops so dramatically because it's done differently from the rest of the cover.
There's a lot of things about Earth 2 I love. I've always been a huge JSA fan, and it actually all started with some JSA, JLA team-ups from the 70s. So I went from those to then the All-Star Comics, the relaunch of All-Star Comics in the 70s. So this version of Robin from Earth 2 in this costume is a real special place in my heart. I absolutely love the adult Dick Grayson Robin from Earth 2 costume. I think it looks great. There's something about it. You just can't miss it compared to other stuff, and this cover is fantastic. I'd never seen it before now, and the 40s Batmobile looks great. I just love this, like, it's the bat head, but then there's this weird cow catcher almost that comes off its chin.
Right, yeah,
it looks like it's just gonna stab, you know, poor Batgirl in the calf there. But yeah, Hugo Strange is very creepy. He looks very, very creepy. And you're right, whether it's the line work or the coloring, there's something about it that just makes it look like it doesn't fit on the cover. No, that's not the right way to say it. It's not a piece of the other one. So it does, in fact, look like a floating head. It looks like some sort of astral, ethereal head, because the line work is so different from the rest of the piece that it just makes it stand out. And it looks really great.
Yeah. I literally remember buying this. This came out in January of 1982. So I would have been that means it came out in like October. I remember going to the 7-Eleven and buying this and then pedaling home on my bike and reading it down on the floor of our basement. I remembered and remembered thinking, who is this Alan Brennert guy? Because he's really good.
Well, I feel like I'm going to have to dig this out and read it now because it looks that good. And it's got so many things in there that I love.
It's great. It's a truly great story.
All right. My next one is Batman and the Outsiders number 12. And I really struggled. I knew I was going to pick one from Batman and the Outsiders. I mean, how could I not? And again, I really for a long time had number 1 on my list. I had number 13 on my list, which features all of them come flying across a cityscape. They're looking for Batman, and Batman's unconscious, like in the foreground down below where they can't see him, which is great. But this one, I just really, really love the way that Aparo has designed this cover. It's the Secret Origin of Katana Part 2. And it's got on the left, it's got Katana, and she's got her sword up. And on the right, she is battling her husband. And it says, the She Samurai versus her husband to the death. And they're both at, like, not a 45-degree angle, but maybe a, I don't know, a 30-degree angle. So it's downward sloping to the left. Their swords are striking right in the middle, clashing, and it's actually over the logo. And again, he uses that giant circular pattern like he did on that Batman cover you like. There's a giant red circle in the background, which is sort of representative of the Japanese flag. The swords are crossing almost in the middle of the red circle. Then below them, you've got the outsiders running at you, and all throughout, radiating from the red circle are all these yellow lines, like, you know, rays coming off like a sun, and it says to love, honor, and destroy. And so the combination of the layout is just exceptional. The husband's in green, she's in yellow, so in red, so the colors contrast nicely. And I think this cover was at my local supermarket for like a long time. I wasn't buying that many Outsiders, but this guy, I remember this particular issue being there for a long time, and it always just really struck me as a powerful cover, and I still think the design is exceptional.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, we all know that any cover drawn by Jim Aparo is going to be brilliantly drawn. We already know that. But the design of this is really compelling. Again, all the lines are drawing your eye to the center, which are the clashed swords. You've got the characters, the other outsiders in the background. The tilted angle is great. Katana, I love Katana up on her tippy toes, like ready to engage this guy in this fight. Everything is slightly off center, even the logo, which I love, and even the copy, which is the origin of Katana Part 2, is off at an angle as well.
Good point.
And so to love, honor, and destroy. So yeah, it's real. The design of it is, and the camera is slightly pointed up too. We're kind of further down on the ground.
Oh yeah, we are.
We're kind of looking up, and again, that's really hard to draw. Really hard to draw. I failed at it many times. You could have done this cover 100 different ways, and it could be pretty boring. But he found a way to really make this a very compelling image.
Yeah. So even if you're not an Outsiders fan, Siskoid, I think even you would appreciate the way this is laid out on this cover.
Yeah, it's really good, really, really good.
Oh, and by the way, that's from July 1984.
All right. So my next pick is also related to the Outsiders. This was the Baxter book. If you can believe it, there was a time that the Batman and the Outsiders were so popular, they had two titles. There was the newsstand book, and then there was the deluxe Baxter book. And this was the Outsiders, no Batman. And if you go back and look at some of these covers, Aparo was really experimenting. I think he was maybe trying to keep himself a little interested or something, or just push the boundaries. They were using different colored ink. They used a metallic ink for the cover to Outsiders number one. The cover to Outsiders number five is done all in pencil. There's no inking on that. There's not really very much color on it. This one has got this the nuclear family. You've got the Outsiders logo down at the bottom of the cover again, and there's no trade dress at the top where it says the Outsiders, because of course this is not being sold on a newsstand. This is being sold in a comic book store, and they knew that, you know, they weren't racked like that. So you just have this giant cloud, and has I don't know if it's just a pencil effect or a stipple effect. I'm not exactly sure what a pair used to get there. It might be even watercolor. I'm not sure. And sticking in the face out of the cloud is the head of the nuclear family. And down at the bottom, it's forming a mushroom cloud. And then you've got the Outsiders standing on their logo. And at the very bottom, you've got the credits. This is Roy Thomas, Todd McFarlane, and Mike Hernandez, which is incorrect.
I was going to say, I was reading those credits going, what?
Yeah,
those people?
Somebody messed up and swapped the cover credits for Infinity Inc. onto the Outsiders cover. These three gentlemen have nothing to do with this comic book. In fact, Mike W. Barr talks about it in a later issue. But the cover design is just fantastic. The nuclear family until that Christmas special that we covered a couple of months ago, actually kind of a pretty good goofy bunch of characters, but this, I love the design.
Well, it was actually the Justice League action cartoon that made him cool.
Oh, that's right. So anyway, of course, any character can be made cool if you approach it the right way, but I just love the effect of this. I love the smoky effect. Again, it's kind of got a pencil. It might just be pencil that he rubbed on like a crackly surface. I remember doing stuff like that back in school to get that effect, but it's such an unusual cover. Again, to have the logo down at the bottom, it's just terrific. I just love it to pieces, because I remember buying this off the stands too at the comic book store and just being like, whoa, what is that? It just looks so different.
Yeah, the mushroom cloud is just amazing. It takes up 2/3 of the cover, guys, and it's just amazing. And just to describe the face a little further, the face is in the clouds of the head of the nuclear family, but it's done in such a way that it's just creepy as hell, because you don't see the outside lines of the guy's face.
Right.
All you hear like the features, the eyes, the eyebrow, the nose, the mouth, and this enormous pipe, you know, which is great, like Bob from the Subculture Genius or whatever it is,
right, yeah,
kind of thing. And it just looks amazing. amazing because there is no face. I mean, the mushroom cloud is his face. He is the mushroom cloud is what it's telling you. And it's just so creepy in 1950s June and Ward Cleaver at the same time. And it's just – it's really powerful. And as you said, all the coloring on the cloud and the line work and the whatever that weird smoggy effect is just astonishing. It's really, really well done. And the blacker part of the clouds, I mean, even George Perez is probably a clapping is because he's famous for little black clouds all around Raven. And so it's really, really well done. Just really striking. A lot of yellow. A lot of yellow, but still very powerful.
Yeah, Aparo was really, I think, trying to push himself a little in these, especially with the covers, and you can show. And I think he was having a lot of fun coming up with some different designs. And, of course, he must have been freed up from having to worry about making the cover look sellable. You know, it didn't matter because by at this point it was at a comic shop and you knew what you were getting. And so you could be a little more experimental, and I think he really took advantage of that.
And with McFarlane drawing the insides, he could just focus more on the cover.
Exactly.
All right. And then my last one, kind of my last one. We're going to talk about that in a minute. My number 10, though, is it's a trade paperback. So it's a little bit of a cheat because it's a trade paperback. And it's I think it's an image actually taken from inside the comic. I'm not entirely sure. But it is Batman, A Death in the Family trade paperback. The original trade paperback. They've done a lot of different versions over the years. The one I like is the one I actually own off the shelf, which is the February 1989 one. This is the one that if you were a comic collector in 1989, you were pretty much issued this as you walked into any store. Let's see. It came out like probably a week after the final issue, Death in the Family, because at this point DC was like, wow, we can get news on this one, because you know it was all over the news media at this point. So it's the Batman logo across the top. On the right-hand side, it says A Death in the Family in this sort of red almost gothic type of Germanic font. And then it says the controversial bestseller by Jim Starlin, Jim Aparo, and Mike DiCarlo. And then all four collector's items in one volume. And the bottom left, the whole background is black. And he leaves a whole lot of black space. I don't want to call black white space, but if you know what I mean, a lot of black space where it's just black. So you just it's very oppressive. This image of Batman, the weight of it is on top of Batman, because in the foreground there is Batman cradling Jason Todd's dead body. And it's really you can't see Batman's face. His head is bent forward like in sorrow. And all you see is a black shadow across his face. It's almost like Keith Giffen got in there and did the face or something. And that was funny. And then Batman – or Robin's broken, bloodied body with his costume, just a mess. And Batman's on his knees. And maybe Aparo did draw this for this cover or it's taken from the inside. I don't remember which. But it's a really powerful image of Batman cradling Robin. And it's shown up in a lot of places. Since then, to represent this story. So what do you think of this trade?
I do believe it is from the comic. And so, yeah, it is a little – this isn't a cover that Aparo composed. This is somebody taking an image and then making his own cover for it. But, yeah, it certainly is a – it tells you everything you need to know. And it certainly is a ghoulish image, one of which I was happy to contribute into its creation. I love that Batman's face is draped in shadow. That you don't see anything. You don't see any features. And you can see his brow kind of furrowed, and you see, you know, Robin's dead body. So, yeah, it's a sad image. And I remember what a huge deal this was when this book came out. And I just as a personal aside, like this book sold, I think, a crap ton of copies. And I can only hope that Jim Aparo got a nice bonus out of this because he drew this. When you draw a comic book that is this big of a seller, I hope you get cut in on some royalties. So I hope he made some nice money off of this.
I would hope so. I wonder what the reprint rights were at this point, because back then, you know, 1989, trade paperbacks weren't a thing. They were very, very rare.
A big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. And to get a trade paperback like a week after the comic was published was like – and maybe it was a month. I don't know, but it was really close.
It was rushed put out, sure.
Yeah. Michael Bailey and I talk about that sort of thing all the time because we covered Death in the Family years ago. And we talked about this specific trade because the new trades use that same image of Batman crediting Robin, but it's the trade dress is very different. And it's a little less – I don't know. I don't want to say less exciting, but the trade dress just doesn't strike me as powerful as this trade dress. And it's very, very powerful.
Well, there's something about the fact that he's so small in the cover that they have so much shadow. I mean, they really could, if they wanted to, blow this up to fill the space, because there's a lot of, I don't want to say dead space, because that's not like, sounds like a pejorative, but I mean, they could, if they wanted to fill that, the most of the cover with the image, but they don't. They make it small, which suggests, you know, the kind of wound or kind of like Batman's been reduced. This is a heavy blow that's been fallen. He looks small in relation to the cover, and it's a good use of the figure and knowing how to lay out the cover.
And for me, I was trying to explain. Maybe I didn't say it very well, or you just weren't listening. But just all that black, I feel like it's actually weighing on Batman's shoulders.
Yes.
I feel like all of that is like a weight on, physically on him.
Yeah.
So
it's a funereal piece, and I mean, it's a death in the family. So there you go.
Yep. All right. So one book left, right?
Yes. And so this was a book that we ended up on both of our lists.
Yeah.
Shag and I both picked this cover. And I think for those of you that know anything about Jim Aparo, I think you probably guess which book I'm talking about. And that is Secret Origins number 10, The Phantom Stranger. And this was the issue that they devoted entirely to four origins of The Phantom Stranger. Ryan Daly covered this over on his Secret Origins podcast. If you're a Phantom Stranger fan, this is a must read because it features four stories by Alan Moore and Joe Orlando, Dan Mishkit and Ernie Colon, the late, great Ernie Colon, Paul Levitz and Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. Praise be his name, and Mike W. Barr and Jim Aparo. And it is Aparo doing his version of M.C. Escher, where you've got the Phantom Stranger from four different views. You've got a ghostly image in the background. You see him from the head down. You're seeing from a profile, and then you're seeing him from below. And he's all four versions are in the same room, and yet all four, you know, you've got the walls all sort of going in all different directions. Again, it's a total gloss on M.C. Escher, but it's perfect for The Phantom Stranger because we're getting four complete different views of this character, none of which are defined as the single origin, which is going completely against the notion of the Secret Origins as a comic book. But
right.
That's what I like about it. I like that they were willing to have some fun with it. And this is it's not one of the last things Aparo would go on for about another 5 or 6 years, but this is, to me, like his last real great winner of a cover. Maybe not last, but certainly one of the last ones that was really special and really unique. And I just love it. I love that he got a chance to do The Phantom Stranger again as well.
Well, he after this, he did go on to do a lot more Batman and was even part of a big part of Nightfall.
Right.
So as far as like sales figures go, some of his later stuff actually is some of the better stuff he'd done in years. But as far as just the power, yeah, this cover is amazing. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. The Escher stuff is just so wonderful. And the bright yellow, the way it works, contrasts so nicely with his dark blue cape.
Yeah.
And I didn't even notice until you mentioned it. Yeah, you've got Phantom Stranger in each one of the corners, except there's none on the right-hand corner because he's in the background.
Right.
Yeah, it's really, really nice. And man, the creative team on this book, that's like a 1990s super group.
Yeah, this is amazing. You got this many good people all in one book. It's unbelievable.
It's the comic book equivalent of Damn Yankees or something. I mean, it's unbelievable. The powerhouses. Yeah, I know. I knew I'd get a sticker out of that.
Yeah.
Traveling Wilburys. It's the comic book equivalent of Traveling Wilburys, the collection of artists in this thing. And they've managed to work in the plural of Genesis on the cover, which is not done very often.
Genesis, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, fantastic cover. And again, a lot of yellow in these covers that you picked today, Rob. But the yellow here, I think, is very, very effective and works really nicely.
It's a good color to use if it evokes an emotion. It's definitely – it's a color that tends to bring out tension. And to use in a lot – when used effectively, it's very, very good. So, yeah, I love – this is just – I love that at this age, he was born in 1924, I believe. So in 1987, he's what, in his 60s? Is he 63 at this point? He's still experimenting. He's still doing different things, and that's a commendable thing that he kept it interesting for himself and kept it interesting for his fans. And I remember loving this comic. It's just a great book all around.
Yeah, this is the one book that ended up in both of our lists. Yep. Just Rob published his list to me privately first, so I didn't get to put it on my list. That's why he won out as having it his last pick. But yeah, wow, just possibly one of my favorite Aparo images entirely. When you mentioned to me you wanted to do the Jim Aparo cover, I mean, this was the first cover that popped into my head.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely was. Yeah, you think it'd be a Batman, but no, it was this one.
And I do have to end up. Well, I do have one honorable mention, and that is from Adventure Comics 443, which is Aquaman riding on a dolphin. And the reason it's not on this list, it is one of my single favorite Aquaman images. But the reason I won't go into it is because it actually made the list on our Aquaman and Firestorm cover-to-cover show. Because it is one of my single favorite Aquaman images of all time, drawn by Jim Aparo. So if you want to hear me and Shai talk about that image, go to that episode of the Fire and Water podcast where we talk about it there.
And I'll mention, I had several honorable mentions I rattled off as we went through, but there's one I missed, which was I was debating on my Spectre choice. I picked the one I picked, but I came very, very close for a long time. One of the ones I had to cut towards the end was the Wrath of the Spectre number 3, which was a reprint series of the old Adventure Comics. And it was a wraparound cover, and it had these sort of paneled images of Jim Corrigan in love and being shot and dying and falling. And then the main cover on the front is he has fallen and died. And in the cover, he's coming up out of the grave. And there's this great white surprint of the Spectre over him. And I just love that cover. It sort of tells the whole story there. And I really love that one, but ultimately I ended up cutting it, but it was another really great, late sort of Aparo one.
Yeah, that was a great series. That was fun because it reprinted some unprinted stories. They had some in the inventory. But I had at least 5 or 6 more covers that I really fought to get in. And I was like, all right, I have to make some hard choices. So.
Yeah, and we could have, honestly, we could have done a whole Jim Aparo special of just non-DC covers and just done mm-hmm. Charlton, because mm-hmm. there's so many really unique Charlton ones that were really fantastic. So, you know, we could do this another day, just like have a rule of no Batman. So
That's true.
So, all right, well, I think that's going to do it. So, yeah, go out to our website. You'll see all these covers there. Leave your feedback. Tell us which of these covers are your favorite. Tell us which other Aparo covers are your favorite. We want to hear. We want to be part of the show. Or you can go out on the social medias and use our hashtag, which is #FWPodcast. You can also find us as FWPodcast on Twitter and Fire and Water Podcast on Facebook. Share your thoughts. We want to have this conversation because Jim Aparo deserves to be celebrated. He's amazing.
Yeah, I never his stuff always makes me happy when I look. And I mean, I almost always know I'm going to get Jim Aparo when I open a comic because usually he did the cover or it's a series that he was a long running artist on. But every so often I'll be surprised by something and I just go, like my favorite horror story in every comic was drawn by Jim Aparo. And they didn't do the cover, unfortunately. I wish that had been the cover feature. I would have picked it. But he's my all-time favorite comic book artist. And I have a sketch, an Aquaman sketch by him.
Really?
Yeah. And so it's one of my prized possessions he's getting. He's just no matter what format, Treasury, Digest, regular size comic, I always enjoy looking at his work. And I was really glad we had a chance to talk about it because I love talking art on podcasts. It's not the natural medium for it, but it's super fun.
So did you get to meet him for that sketch, or did someone purchase it?
It was given to me as a gift.
Wow, that is an amazing gift.
I unfortunately never got to meet the man. That I'm always sorry. I never had a chance to meet him because I just would have – well, I'm sure I would have geeked out totally, but it would have been worth it just to be able to shake his hand and tell him how much I loved his work.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about just the number of – because of something like Brave and the Bold, the number of different characters he got a chance to work on, mm-hmm. you know? And I mean, and the love of that series, a lot of the love of that series comes from his work. And it goes on to, you know, you get the animated series, Batman Brave and the Bold, which was inspired by the love of that comic series. And I think a lot of it comes from him.
Oh, sure. So, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, folks. Well, that's going to do it. Again, go out on the social medias, get in touch with us, let us know your thoughts, and on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. I think it's going to do it. So until next time, who's next? No, wait, that's not the right end tag at all, is it?
It's very late, folks.
We'll try that one more time. Unless Rob fixed this in editing, you're all having a good laugh at my expense.
Oh, I'm leaving this in.
Oh, wonderful. Until next time, fan the flame.
And ride the wave.
I hate you.
See you in Boston.
God.
Aquaman and Firestorm fighting crime together. Soak them down
or burn them up.
No one does it better. Whenever you find trouble, they'll always be there to catch them in a bubble
or even torch their hair.
They stand for truth and justice
in sea,
on land, in air. Aquaman and Firestorm, they make a super pair.
Aquaman
and Firestorm,
super friends forever. Yeah.
Remember the safety of the citizens above all else.
Even your own. We know. No worries, Batman. No bystanders will get bashed with the outsiders on the job.